Hey guys, and welcome back to Percussion Perspective. This is Remy.
This is Kevin.
And today on this episode, we are going to give you some tips for rehearsing a marching percussion ensemble. So a marching percussion ensemble is not just the drumline, not just the front ensemble, but both of those entities together. But before we get into that, what's up, my dude?
Not much. We'll be going into our first full week, so it feels like marching band hasn't started, but then it also feels like we're already like in the middle of it. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, like we have at this point had 2.5 weeks of band camp and then the first 2 days of school.
Yeah, it's like everything just like threw up all over us. It just happened so fast. But
yeah, it's...
we're doing good. I mean, that, I guess that's the good thing about it is because we don't need time to like jump into it. We just start. So everything's going well. We have 2 weeks before our first football game, and it's an away game. So we have lots of time.
Will you take your show to that or just pep band?
No, it'll be just pep band.
Yeah, that's easy then.
So we have a lot of time to kind of get going on things. We're going to be getting drill started, I think, tomorrow, hopefully. I know you guys have already had some drill. How much do you have?
Yeah, we have our first, we have part one on the field.
How many pages of drill?
20 or 21, something like that.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah, but our drill writer is our head band director, so.
Yeah. Is it like, are they just like sets of four? Four counts?
No, it's quite a bit. I mean, it's kidding. Like 2 minutes or so, 2.5 minutes of the show.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You guys are going to get first place at OBA.
Probably not. But give us a few years.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. You want to get into this tips for rehearsing a percussion?
Yeah, let's talk
marching
about
percussion.
Let's talk about it. Sorry. Marching percussion. Yeah.
Cool. Why don't you start us off?
Okay. So,
number one,
Remy's a jerk. So kind of the obvious one, I think, is playing together often. Like your drum line and your front ensemble needs to play together often. You're going to have separate warmups, but you need to have, you know, some kind of warmups that can be played together to start solidifying, you know, listening tendencies and stuff like that. So you can start really locking in the sound of both of the ensembles kind of playing together, giving the front ensemble a chance to kind of start listening to the drum line and kind of listening for what they should be, you know, locking into sound wise. So doing a lot of warmups together and then obviously getting into your show music often and playing together. Cause I've had times where like they just don't play very well together because we just haven't done it. And I know that generally when they don't play together, it's because you're trying to clean up, you know, stuff in sectionals. Cause there's always things to try to clean up. But you need to make sure you're kind of giving them time to play together.
Yeah, that's a really huge one that I feel like there are some groups out there that probably don't do that. So that's a helpful one. That kind of goes into this first one is, Kevin's talking about, you know, you're always trying to be separate and clean up things. So my first one is learn your parts separately, you know, like until they are quote unquote playable. They don't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be completely up to tempo or anything like that. But, you know, unless you're in a situation where, you just don't have enough staff, you know, to split up and learn parts. Like it's completely different for the drum line to go through their show music and the front ensemble to go through their show music. They're going to go through them at different paces. And they just need help in different ways. So, you know, go through separately and learn your music and then come together afterwards when it is quote unquote playable.
Yeah. It's crazy how fast most of the time, like a drum line can get through a chunk of music and then how your front ensemble is like, depending upon the year, I guess, but like the front ensemble could be, you know, halfway through at half tempo and you're just like, come on, man. But that all kind of, I mean, that all just kind of comes down to how well the kids, you know, have bought into this since sixth grade. And you'll have kids that learn music fast and some that struggle.
Yeah. It's generally because of the, you know, percussionists are always struggling with reading notes. It's just so much harder to read notes on a keyboard instrument than it is on a wind instrument. So that's a factor that slows them down a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's important to split up and learn, and then come back together. All right. What else you got?
Yeah. Have drill rehearsals. So like if you're able to have sectionals where you can just have the front ensemble set up in the front and then the drum line can, I mean, you're just essentially doing the show without the winds and the brass. You're just kind of going through your show music, because that's a really good time where your front ensemble can learn to listen back and figure out like where their tendencies are to rush or slow down or whatever. But basically just getting used to their ears turning backwards and listening to like, oh, the drum line's on the side 130. I need to listen that way, or vice versa. So if you can find time to do that, it's sometimes rare with us just because having the football field is sometimes not, you know, that simple when it's like sectional time. The football team might be out there or something, but doing your show with just the percussion section can sometimes really help lock in tempos and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's one of my that I had down. We just call it like a field sectional or whatever. But like Kevin said, the front ensemble learns to listen back. The other thing is the drum line learns to not listen forward, right? Like they have to get used to hearing the show like half a count or a count behind, depending on, you know, how far backfield they are. And sometimes that's really awkward. So it's just, you know, kind of getting both of those groups to understand their roles and play together, you know, from back to front, you know, because you want your sound to hit the audience at the same time. So if your drumline's listening forward to the front ensemble, even if it's a section where they're not playing, like, you know, if they have an entrance coming up and they're listening to the front ensemble for that time, if you're at the front of the field, that entrance is going to sound late. So yeah, just getting them used to kind of like that weird feeling of being ahead of what they hear.
Yeah. I would also recommend on, if you're doing what you call it, a field sectional.
Yeah. Field sectional.
Have a drum major there, because
that's helpful too.
Help solidify all that stuff. One of my tips includes the drum major later, but.
Ooh. Yeah. My next one is use a metronome. Yeah, I know that's one of yours from last week, which you said you hadn't done very well on. So I just wanted to remind you.
Thank you. I'll write it down. I'm going to write it down.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Put a reminder in your phone.
I'm writing it down.
So something under this is like met placement, knowing where the metronome needs to be. So what we were just talking about, you know, sound traveling from, you want it to go from the back of the field to the front of the field so that it all hits your audience at the same time. There's a really great YouTube video that demonstrates this, and maybe we should link it in the show notes for this week. You know, the one that I'm talking about?
I think so.
Yeah. It like where there's like a snare drummer on the back sideline and then like on the, like right in the middle, you know, right on the logo or whatever on the 50-yard line, and then one on like the front hash or the front.
And they just like demonstrate the differences.
Yeah, they just demonstrate like the they turn a metronome on and they have the kid in the back play like a rim shot right on beat one, and it sounds, you know, super. What they're doing is they turn a metronome on at the front of the field, the middle of the field, and the back of the field where each of those kids are.
Yeah,
and it's like the rim shot is really dirty when the Met is at the front of the field, and then it's like a little cleaner, but still pretty dirty in the middle. And then it's together at the back, even though they're all playing, you know,
with what they hear. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to explain. I just, you know, that's what the video is for.
That's some of the, I need to probably watch that. Cause that's always some of the, like if we're in the middle of a, of a rehearsal and like our head director will look at me and be like, what's the problem? And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like it's a placement. Do you guys have like a Met person that stays behind the drum line, or where's your Met at normally?
So we always have the metronome with like controlled by our backfield drum major.
Yeah.
I've heard of programs that have a person that just holds the Met and just follows the drum line around. And sometime as we start phasing out the Met later in the season, or not later in the season, but yeah, later than now,
yeah.
Later than the first week of school, I will actually sometimes do that, like just grab the metronome and just chase the drum line around, stand right behind the center snare and, do it that way. And, then I'll do that same thing, but with like a gawk block instead of a Met. So it's a little bit quieter and
just keeps the drum line pushing and coming.
Yeah. It may allow them to slow down or speed up slightly. Like it's more realistic to an actual performance because they're not on a computerized metronome. Yeah. Anyway. So yeah, that Met placement is really important. For full coordination, put it at the back of the field. Pretty much any time you're outside, it should be at the back of the field because again, that sound wants to go from back to front. If you're at a standstill though, you know, behind the drum line is good. Like if you are just doing a standstill rehearsal, the front ensemble set up on the front sideline, and then you've got your battery arced up behind them. What I usually like to do is just like, you know, lean it on the center snare's carrier or something so that he can hear it really well, but it's kind of pointed into the ground so that it's not super, super loud, so that you can teach those front ensemble players to actually listen to the time from the drum line, not the Met, because that Met's not going to be there, in performances.
Yeah.
So yeah, use a Met, know where to put it.
Yeah. My next one is kind of about the front ensemble specifically. And you can kind of chime in if you have a thought on this also, but, so front ensemble watching the drum major can cause issues. So when you're kind of, when we're talking about like cleaning the drum line or the percussion section as a whole, a lot of times your front ensemble might have issues because they're just not listening behind them. So they'll like get ahead because they're kind of watching the drum major. They're trying to kind of do what they would do in like concert percussion and be like spot on with the, what's it called? Ictus.
The ictus. Yeah.
They're trying to be spot on with that, but it's like, that's not necessarily going to work sound wise, especially when they're being amplified and that sound's just going to hit the audience faster. So unless the front ensemble is like playing something by themselves, which honestly, in that case, it's like, as long as they're not altering the tempo too much, like the drum major can maybe just kind of follow them.
Yeah. Just let them go
with what's happening. But yeah, the front ensemble needs to, I would say 95% of the time they're listening behind them to anything they need to stay in time, whether it's the drum line or the winds or whatever. I mean, a lot of times they're going to play something with the winds, like a woodwind feature. The marimbas are going to, you know, copy and paste. So being able to listen back, because watching can cause more issues than helping.
Yeah. Those words can do a lot of damage in the wrong spot. Watch the drum major.
Yeah.
And I'm not anti drum major or anything like that, but, yeah, a lot of your problems can just be solved by listening back. And like Kevin said, there are times where the front might need to watch, or, you know, like the center snare should be watching the drum major, and the drum major should be watching the center snare's feet. So they're always kind of linked up, you know, where whatever's happening. Those two are really the ones that are going to be, you know, in control of the show.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, that's a good one. And there are a few spots where it's like, okay, hey, you're really going to need to stay on the drum major's hands here, because you're like a rack player that's playing like a suspended cymbal part or something like that. The drum line's not playing here. You're the only timing, so you need to like really stay. But for the most part, if your front ensemble is used to practicing with a metronome, hopefully that muscle memory is just there and you kind of just let them play.
Yeah. I kind of skipped one, but it was kind of like the same idea. Like you said,
it's my turn. So
dang it.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Like you said, like if there's a front ensemble person that's like playing, I don't know, like eighth notes on a hi-hat or some kind of like timekeeping thing, instrument part, whatever. Yeah. then you'd want to make sure that kid knew their assignment, which is, you know, could be watching the drum major, depending upon what's happening behind him or her, or it's probably going to be turn around and watch the, like if the drum line's marching, turn around and watch what the feet are doing in that center snare. There's always tendencies that you have to kind of figure out, and you need to be aware of. Normally it's going to come from they're being told to watch versus listen. So they just need to know throughout the show when to do either or.
Yeah. This is sort of just turned into like how to fix phasing issues, but a lot of timing issues really just come down to what Kevin just said. Like, do you understand the assignment? Do you understand what your role is right here? Are you the time, you know, producer? Are you the time keeper, the time listener? What I don't know how to say that, but yeah. It's like, you know, are you producing the time? Is the time coming from you, or is it somewhere else? And you have to know where to listen to that. And that changes constantly in a show. Like in our, you know, our part one right now that's on the field, our drum line is like stretched out to like the 20 yard line, the stage left 20 yard line, or the side two 20 yard line. And like, you know, that's tough to listen all the way over there for the front ensemble. So we've had to work on that anyway. But yeah, that's a lot of really good info. My next one we kind of already talked about was just like doing percussion ensemble rehearsals. So I'm going to skip that one. Coordinate unison sections in small chunks. So a lot of times this ends up being like cymbal work or something for the front ensemble. You know, if there's whether it's a drum break or just small little areas like, oh, hey, these two measures, we have like the drum line has a lot of accents or rim shots that line up with the cymbal work in the front ensemble. And so like, you know, take that down to a small chunk of four measures, two measures, one measure, and clean it that way, you know, together, and make sure again that those front ensemble members understand what their role is. And it's like, hey, these aren't just random cymbal hits. These actually line up with something. So they should know the battery music in those measures, you know what they're listening for.
Yeah. And it's generally going to be like you said, the kid that it's going to have like a splash hit or like a cymbal choke. Like I've got a part in the show where like basically everyone with a cymbal is like rolling and they've got a choke like immediately. And so like, that's a kind of a coordination thing, like you were talking about, like they all need to be looking the same and choking the cymbal at the exact same time at the exact same or with the same technique. But yeah. And I'll sometimes if the kid can do it, I'll be like, you need to actually go home and learn how to play this little part. If you're supposed to play this splash cymbal on the Tay of three or whatever, go home and figure out the snare drum part and be able to like understand that part. So then you can just kind of hear it in your head better and know how to do it. This is funny to everyone else because it went silent because your microphone is muted.
I'm muted. Sorry.
What'd you say? Anyway,
I was saying it's a lot easier to learn the part chakuku 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 cha than
yeah.
You know, yes. Like if yes. You just understand the whole thing. So, and again, if you know the part, it's more likely that it's going to stay in time rather yes. than just one, two, one, rather than those kind of like random little notes. So that's a good one. While we're on cymbal work right here, something that I've really tried to do the last couple of years is like meter out our cymbal rolls. So it, you know, the same way we talked about in one of the last episode or two, we talked about metering out your buzz rolls, like depending on your tempo, like this needs to be a sextuplet or this needs to be 16th bass or whatever. I don't remember what episode that was. Tips for a cleaner drumline, maybe.
Yeah, probably something like that. Last
was one. Was that the last episode? Who knows?
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, depending on your speed, you don't just, it's not like a concert suspended cymbal roll where, you know, I mean, you want it to sound, you know, good. It's roughly the same technique, but since you have, you know, sometimes 8, 9, 10, whatever, 15 people playing a suspended cymbal roll together, into a big hit or whatever, you want to meter that, you know, whether you're using sixes or fours or a combination of the two. So that helps, you know, everybody land in time when like front ensembles are like pulsing together, that helps them stay together and, just helps it, you know, crescendo more evenly. And instead of just like, I've got kids that will just try to get to that cymbal as fast as they can and just roll as fast as they can. And it's like, hey, yes, it's okay to play like triplets instead of 64th notes.
And it's like the beginning of that roll should be absolutely nothing. It should be like, don't start that roll like with your mallet 10 feet up in the air.
Yeah.
And you're starting.
I don't even want to hear suspended cymbal for like two counts, you know? So
yeah, that's a good tip too. Like if you're suspended cymbal roll should pretty much be like, I don't know. You could think about it as like, if it's a two measure roll, like they should be, it should take them the majority of that time to get from like 0 to 50%. And then the last couple of beats to get from 50 to 100, I don't know, something like that. Don't peak way too early.
Yeah. We could do a whole episode about this. So let's shut up about it.
All right.
That way we've got,
we're now changing this episode to the third topic.
Yeah. Your turn, right?
Okay. Yeah. What's going to also help is if your kids are all playing consistently with the same technique. So, you know, like it's going to be a little different based on like a marching snare versus a marimba, but the whole logic of prepping your mallet or prepping your stick and stuff like that, it should all be pretty similar. This goes back to how they learned how to prep and play in sixth grade percussion. But if you've got like, you know, the drum line's going doo 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 chak gong gong, and you've got a bass and gong player at the front that needs to like, that's going to be hitting that downbeat with them, that gong and bass drum player needs to know like doo 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 chak, prep, play, and following the same technique so that all those things are hit together. So look at your keyboard players. Are they all kind of prepping together? Same thing with your drum line. And there should be a little bit of similarity between your battery and your front ensemble in regards to just prep and play and all of those techniques that are kind of involved in all of that. That could have been like step one, like make sure your kids are playing with the same technique ish, you know, as much as possible when it comes to the slight differences between battery and front ensemble, but that'll help. Obviously everyone prepping and dudding, every kid should be strongly feeling the tempo, stuff like that.
Yeah. I like to say, like, I agree with that 100%. I like to say approach maybe rather than technique. Cause like you said, technique is like a little bit more, like zoomed in or whatever, like per instrument.
Yeah.
Just going with the same approach. And like you said, that bass drum and gong player has to know exactly when to prep, you know, to hit that downbeat also. That's a good one. And that just kind of goes all the way back to how you are teaching your younger kids. Go outside often. So that kind of goes with like the field sectionals, but you know, not only that, even if you just, hey guys, we're going to go block it up in this parking lot and run an extension cord out there and play. Because you know, it's hot and I get it, but marching band is meant to be heard outside. And it's so much easier. Like it's crazy how much cleaner it can get when you go outside and your snares and quad, like you, your drum line specifically can hear so much better because there's not so much like reverberation happening and, you know, inside a room, even if you're in a band room, you know, with some acoustic treatment and stuff, like those drums were not meant to be listened to inside. They were not meant to be heard inside.
There's something to be said too with that of like it, once you, I think there's a level of like relaxation the kids might have when you're inside, and when you get them outside and they're like wearing the drums and they're sweating and they're moving around, they might have a little more of a tendency of like, let's get this crap done and let's do it well so we can move on, instead of like,
yeah,
you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, I see a difference in that. Like being inside is like, oh, it's chill, it's whatever.
Yeah, we're just using kind of cleaning up.
And all, yeah. And it's like, well, it's not though.
It's like now we're outside and we're having issues that we need to get fixed, stuff like that. So and again, you're not going to perform your show inside with stands. So,
right. Yeah. We got new drums this year, I mentioned, and the quads specifically are quite a bit heavier. And so it's like, you know, I feel bad for my quad kids, and I'm really trying to like toe the line between like making them wear them all the time and giving them a break. But I know if I give them breaks, then they're not going to build up the endurance. So that's like a daily struggle, like trying to figure out where they are with that.
Yeah.
And I think at least one of them listens to this. So shout out,
kid. I do have one that I know for sure.
Yeah. So go outside a lot. It just helps with your listening and your cleaning and gets everybody used to what it sounds like outside.
Yeah, this is my last one. You got one more after this, or how many more you got?
I do have, that's the last one. I'll wrap it up here with one more, but
okay. Well, the last one I have, we kind of already mentioned it, but, and again, this is kind of more on phasing, I guess, but it all kind of connects, but, make sure that your center snare and your drum major are locked in. Again, we already kind of said that, but nice. Yeah, your drum major should be like watching. I'm not trying to say that the center snare is like a better timekeeper than your drum major is, but it's like if the drum line is playing, you're not going to change their tempo. Like you're not a drum major is not going to,
yeah,
a drum, like, you get what I'm saying? Like a drum line, if they're going, it's like a train moving down a railroad track. It's not going to like stop easily or change. And we've all been in that moment too, where like your center snare is like trying to be a hero and they like try to stay with the drum major. So then it's still the rest of the drum line and your center snare is off.
Right.
Because it can't change. So if the drum line is playing and you've worked stuff out with a Met and they're playing well on their own, then when you get into those situations, I'm not saying the drum line is like 100% never wrong. They're wrong a lot, but
They're wrong a lot.
But,
yeah.
But, if the drum line has been prepped properly, then the drum major should be able to like watch the feet of your center snare. And that should be a pretty consistent, tempo source. So kind of the drum major and the center snare should kind of always be locked in and be, you know, watching each other to keep everything moving. And then everything stems from there. Snares listen in, tenors listen over basses, then front ensemble listens back, band listens to the drum line and watches, but it's more of a listening game.
Yeah, it really is. I think people get upset when you say that, but man, I mean, there are bands in this area of the country. Like I have one in mind that, I don't know if they do it anymore, but for several years, they just didn't have a drum major. Like, yeah. And they just like wiped the floor with people. They were so good. They were so clean. It was in time. They kind of proved like listening is really it. Now, I'm sure there were some creative ways that they had to get around not having a drum major.
Right.
Like, yeah. How do we start the show? You know, and there were always always some sort of, like we were saying earlier, cheater beats. There were some hi-hat. Sometimes there was just like a straight gawk block in the front ensemble, or there were always some, you know, little bass one, bass two grooves happening in the back that is essentially just a metronome. But if you write it well and tasteful, then you know, you don't really notice it as much.
It doesn't come across as a Met, yeah.
Our head drum major is a percussionist, and that's a, you know, I'm always like, don't you just want to like play? Isn't that more fun? But I give her crap about that all the time, but she's really great. She's a fantastic percussionist, but she's also a good drum major. So that helps us a lot. Like having two people, like my center snare is also a really, really good player. And like having, you know, those two people that are in charge of the time, like, we're solid there.
Yeah.
And like you said, a drum major is not going to be able to quickly change a drumline. Like, you know, there's that, there's the order of operations of like the center snare playing with the Met or the drum major's hands or whatever, that relationship there. And then those snares listening to that, and then that quad, you know, listening in. So it's like, it's much more, it's just going to be easier if the drum line is just in time and everyone else listens to them.
Yeah.
In most cases.
Yeah.
Cool. I think that's all I got. I mean, I had weekly sectionals on here, but you had that, you know, we've got our first sectionals. Yeah. Tips for rehearsing marching percussion. Rehearse marching percussion. You know, some people just try to make that fit in their morning,
right?
Their morning rehearsals. And unless you've got, you know, 3 hours every morning, it's just not enough time to get everything done. So we're having our first sectional of the school year or whatever, you know, tomorrow. So we have ours on Mondays. We're recording this on a Sunday afternoon, everyone.
Now they know.
Just in case you're curious. Well, what do they think we're doing? Like, have an extra time during the week? Probably not. I've got like 82 hours.
Yeah, if we have to be like, hey man, I got to go start my beginning percussion class.
Yeah.
Cool. Well,
we should do a live episode from a class sometime.
From one of our classrooms.
Yeah. The kids would probably think that's cool. We might lose our jobs. I don't know. All right, guys. Well, as always, shoot us an email. We have been getting a little bit more, we've been getting some more followers on Instagram and stuff like that. We've done a few of the PPP, Percussion Perspective PDFs. I think those are, you know, popular with the people,
the folks.
So yeah, look for those. Give us a comment or a like or a share or anything like that. And you can email us at percussionperspectivepod@gmail.com.
Yeah. Do all the things that he just said. All right. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Later, guys.